Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Karen Conti is in our studio, the founding partner at Conti and Dolan, and the author now of Killing Time with John Wayne Gacy, defending America's most evil serial killer on death row. She's a colleague of ours here at WGN Radio. You frequently hear her as an expert guest, and she hosts a weekend show as well. She's in our studio now, and the book is out today. Welcome to the studio.
Hi, John. Good to see you, as always.
Yeah, likewise. So who... At the risk of sounding like one of your DePaul law students, who was John Wayne Gacy?
He was a bad dude who in the 1970s was killing young men and boys and burying most of them under his house in his crawl space. He was a construction guy. He was a successful contractor. He was an upstanding guy in the community of Norwood Park. He was going to church every Sunday.
Had his picture taken with Rosalind Carter.
Absolutely. And at night, he was living this double life of evil and horror and torture.
Because he had political connections in the Polish community and the Polish political community in Chicago. So he was not a big player, but he was close to people that were. And you said that in today's dollars, his business made $400,000 a year, or he did.
Yeah, he was a very hard worker. He remodeled, you know, Bressler's ice cream and some drugstores, and he did home construction. And he was very busy and very successful. And it's just a strange thing to see somebody who is that upstanding guilty of so many horrific crimes that and he wasn't caught.
Twice married, had kids.
He did.
A couple of girls.
Yes.
And how was he caught?
One unfortunate...
Wait, before you answer that, I just want to address this. We talked about it off the air. In the book, you talk about the fact that he killed, raped, murdered 33 young men and boys, maybe more, but buried them in a crawl space in his home. You don't spend a lot of time talking about the acts or the quote-unquote torture, which I think I'm fine with. But why didn't you go into more detail? And I ask that for a particular reason, but why didn't you?
Well, first of all, I didn't feel like that was my story to be told. By the time I represented Gacy, he denied he did any of this. So it wasn't like I had discussions with him about it.
He had previously committed, though. He had confessed.
He did. Right when he was arrested, he did confess in great detail about some of the names, where he abducted them, where they were found in the crawl space. But when I got to him, this wasn't my story. And I don't mean that in a flip way. There have been books written. There have been documentaries written. And I just don't have any details to add to that.
What were you representing him for?
I was trying to get the death penalty lifted or stayed. And that was simply what we were attempting to do. We were not trying to get him out of prison. That would have been even more impossible than what I was tasked to do.
He was already convicted and on death row when you met him.
14 years in the making. You know, I was in high school when he was convicted. So he had spent a lot of time on death row going up and down the appeals process.
So then how old were you when you represented him?
I was about 28.
Is that remarkable, that high profile a case with a person who didn't have death row experience like yourself was now representing John Wayne Gacy?
Yeah, it was weird. But I was part of a team. You know, I wasn't the only one. So there were two really good death penalty lawyers who were on the team. And then my husband and partner, the late Greg Adamski, who some of your listeners may remember, a host of the show with me here. And he was also a very good lawyer, but had never handled a death penalty case.
How did John Gacy get caught?
There was a young man named Robert Peast who went into the store where Gacy was doing construction. This kid wanted a job, and Gacy was paying more than he was making. He was a high school kid. His mother was celebrating her 40th birthday, I believe, and she never saw her son again. He took him, probably said, hey, let's go back to the house, and fill out an application, and he was probably dead within an hour or two.
What do we think happened?
I think that he conned him into going to his house, and he did something horrible to him and killed him immediately. And the mother was just out of her mind and said, you know, it's this guy. He went in there and he never came back. And he's not a kid to run away. And, you know, there had been so many, and I detail in my book, John, how many times victims escaped. They went to the police. Charges were brought. Charges were dropped. Gacy was the last person to see a bunch of kids, and the police questioned him and just never pursued it. Why? I don't know.
Was some of that in Iowa?
Well, he had a conviction in Iowa for
sodomy.
Mm-hmm. He had a 10-year sentence. He served about two. And that's when he returned to Illinois and started his crime spree.
And this is not that important, but then, so he serves 2 years in jail for sodomy in Iowa, comes back to the Chicago area, and it was then that he was given Secret Service clearance and could have been with the First Lady.
It's unbelievable. It's absolutely unbelievable. And I think it's a different time if you think about this. We didn't have those databases that connected all the convictions in all the states. So it could be that nobody knew about that, but that's their job to know about it.
Did you reach out to John Wayne Gacy or did he reach out to you? He's on death row. There's another angle that maybe can be pursued here, but how is it that you were connected with him?
It's a long story, but my partner and I had argued a case before the U.S. Supreme Court on a First Amendment issue, and Gacy was being sued by the prison because of the paintings, you can put that in quotes, that he was doing and making money. So the Illinois Department of Corrections was suing him civilly, and Gacy wanted representation. Well, I thought that was ridiculous. You're about to be executed and you're worried about money, but I wanted to go down and meet him. I was just curious. I wanted to go on death row, and I wanted to look evil in the eye.
But he contacted you?
Yes.
That must have been weird to get that call.
Very weird to think that a serial killer whose name was a household word at the time knew who we were.
So what was it like when you met him the first time?
It wasn't frightening at all because he was so normal. You know, he wasn't imposing, 5'9". He had the prison pallor, kind of dumpy, very engaging, charming, funny. That's why he got away with it. There was nothing imposing about him.
He didn't dress as a clown outfit when he was killing people?
Never. That's what a lot of people have a misconception
about. He was a clown.
He liked to dress up and entertain children, but he never picked up anyone dressed like that because I doubt that anyone would have gone with him looking like that.
He said that when you're a clown, you said that when he would do parties, he would do children's parties.
Yes.
And if the kids were nice and sweet, he'd be kind to them. If they weren't, he'd pinch them really hard.
Yes.
The kids would yelp. They would tell their mom or dad, but he said that they wouldn't believe the kid, they would believe him.
John Gacy, an arbiter of morality of children. How's
that?
But
what was his line about that? When you're a clown, you can get away with murder. Rim shot. But I mean, he said that and he was meaning I get to pinch the kids and nobody will doubt me. But he also, you said, psychologically, maybe enjoyed the facade of a clown because that de-individualizes him. It sort of separates him from the darker side.
I think that's really true. And I think, you know, we talk a little bit in the book about how you know, you are in a costume party. You know, people start doing really weird things because you don't have an identity. Do people do things all the time on the text that they would never do in person, right? So that de-individuation and is a really big part of Gacy's personality because if he really faced what he did, he couldn't deal with it.
He talked like a Chicago construction guy. He did a lot of use and these and those.
De Bears. Just think De Bears.
That's what he sounded like.
He did.
You also said he was funny. Your dad was a stand-up comedian professionally for decades, right?
Yes.
He was on Major Bo's Talent Hour with Frank Sinatra.
Yes.
That's unbelievable.
He performed at the Playboy clubs across the country in a place called Mangum Chateau. Some of your older listeners might remember that
that's
place
your
in
dad.
The suburbs. Yeah.
So that's where you get your wry wit yourself. You're kind of a snappy person, too. I mean that in a humorous way. I mean, your book is layered with barbs that you would exchange with John Gacy yourself, which frankly I found a little unsettling at times. I mean, you were kind of cheeky and chummy with him, weren't you?
Yeah, and you know, I had to be. And I tell people this all the time. I represent people I don't like all the time. But I have to find something I like about somebody because I have to step in their shoes and I have to help them. And Gacy was no different. And he was very difficult to deal with, very oppositional. And I was the one who was able to get under his skin a little bit. And our relationship allowed me to try to get him to do what he needed to do to sign on to some of our strategies.
But you didn't have to represent him. I understand the curiosity. Maybe after that first meeting, your curiosity would be sated. Why did you want to represent him?
I have always had a real deep opposition to the death penalty, even when I was a kid. Both my parents were in favor of it. But when I saw all those people on death row, and it wasn't just Gacy, it was other people, black and brown people, people who I knew, you know, had poor counsel. Gacy didn't have any of those good defenses, but the other people did. And I kind of thought, you know what, this is a cause that I could get behind. I can represent Gacy. I can make a point of saying in public that the death penalty is wrong, even for the poster child who was sitting right in front of me. But I'm also making the argument for the other people on death row in Illinois and across the country who may have been wrongfully convicted or didn't receive proper justice.
You had a statistic that something like 1 in 9 finished that. What is the number there? 1 in 9 people who are on death row are in fact exonerated, not on a technicality, but because in fact it is proven that they did not commit the crime that they're on death row for.
One in nine. And in Illinois, over a 15-year period after Gacy, 12 people walked off of death row, actual innocence, not a technicality, and 12 were executed. And that's why George Ryan, our Republican governor, basically commuted everyone's death sentences. And you can, you know, everyone kind of goes, oh, he was in trouble. He wanted to curry favor. I saw him speak. I believe that he believed that that was the wrong thing to do.
Well, Northwestern University had a hand in that too, didn't they?
They did. They did. And, you know, they get it wrong all the time. And people ask, how would you get it wrong so many times? When it's a horrific crime, the jurors want to put someone in jail. And I'm not saying that they do a bad job, because I think jurors are fabulous, but they're going to make sure that if that guy had even a possibility of committing those horrific crimes against children, multiple crimes, they're going to put him in jail.
Gacy called you dollface.
He did.
And you all were close enough that, in fact, he would, when he needed to speak to you, call your home that you were sharing with your then husband, your father, and your stepson, right?
Yes.
And you walked in one time, and who is your 14-year-old stepson chatting away with amiably but John Wayne Gacy? And what are they talking about?
Well, I think they were talking about my stepson's sexuality.
Okay, I want to just pick it up here for a moment and also talk about your defense of Gacy in this case, not your conversation with your stepson, but also all the way up to the end. You did not witness the execution per se, right?
Right. I was not allowed to, nor were the victims' families.
Yeah, which was very strange, because I don't know if we all recall how botched his execution was. Some people may find that just, but if you believe that somebody should be put to death, I don't know that we should torture them. Karen Conti's book is Killing Time with John Wayne Gacy. That's a good title, Karen.
Killing I thought time. Of it.
Yeah, because not only is it his killing time, he was killing people, he got killed, but you were with him so much, sometimes you were just killing time. One time he's on the phone talking to your 14-year-old son. Can you just add a little context
to
that?
Well, that was like a DCFS event waiting to happen, right?
You think?
Well, so Gacy called us at home, and, you know, we sort of, we didn't tolerate that with other clients, but when he had, you know, a death date, you kind of was like, okay. And sometimes we couldn't talk to him during the day. So we allowed him to call at home, which was probably not a good idea. He talked to my father, he talked to my stepson, and he talked to all of us. Yeah, he was talking about my stepson's sexuality, because we didn't really know at that time. You know, you never brought a girlfriend around, and we never even thought about it, and there was Gacy talking to him about it.
Gacy was gay or not?
He said, I can't say that on the air. He was a homosexual, yes. But, yeah. You know, he was married twice, and I think he tried as best he could to not be gay. I think that was one of the problems that he had in his head about his sexuality.
His father and mother named him John Wayne Gacy, after the big macho actor, and he never lived up to his father's image of masculinity.
No. And in fact, his sister, who I've been friends with for 30 years, tells me that he liked to cook and he liked to garden and he didn't want to go hunting and fishing like his dad wanted to. He was not athletic. And that was a big point of contention with his father, who called him all kinds of homophobic names.
And he grew up in an era where it was harder to be gay. There were not LGBTQ support clubs or movements. He liked gardening. He liked painting. He gave you some of his notorious artwork, didn't he? He painted things specifically for you.
He did. You know, Gacy really liked women, and he loved his mother. He loved his sisters. He loved his wives. He wasn't a bad father. So, you know, these people are not all 100% of the time bad. They're very compartmentalized, just like we see this Gilgo Beach guy. You know, he's a guy who's an architect. He's successful. He's got a wife. He's got a home. He's got all these things. And then he just has this little thing where he goes out and kills women
at
night.
Do you think he was able to not act on those impulses, John Wayne Gacy?
I think everyone has free will to do and not do, but I think the compulsions were very strong for him, according to the psychologist.
A psychologist said he would have done it in front of a police officer.
Yes,
he was
that's
that
exactly.
without will to
yes.
resist. About the art that he gave you, you keep it in your basement, you don't display it, you haven't sold it, correct?
No, I have not sold it.
It's weird because it's probably worth many thousands of dollars.
Probably.
Do you have his brain?
I do not have his brain. I was able to get the brain back. So the story is that when he was executed, a psychiatrist from, I believe it was University of Chicago, wanted to get the brain to see if there was any organic problem with it. And the family said, fine, we'd love to know that. So she looked at it and she didn't note anything, but she kept it. And all of a sudden we heard that that woman was getting ready to sell it to some freak museum in Las Vegas. So I had to send her a letter and get the brain back, and it was delivered to my office.
She was going to get $1 million for it. What
yes.
did you do with it?
Oh, I immediately called his sister, and his sister came and picked it up.
And?
She just didn't want anyone else to have it.
She may have had it destroyed.
Probably.
You think that he was involved in the production of snuff films?
I think that's a possibility.
Of what was going on in that house?
I mean, there were things going on in that house beyond what was reported.
Snuff films are movies, little 8mm things back in the day where people are killed, and it's a kind of twisted pornography.
And it couldn't, you know, snuff films, my understanding is we've never seen one. No, there's never been one that actually was found. I don't know if that's true or not.
And the
and
history
that this
of snuff films?
Yeah, correct.
It's an idea more than a reality.
Yeah, it's like an urban legend.
Do you think he acted alone?
I do not think he acted alone. I think he had two young men living with him at the time who testified that they dug the trenches. It's impossible that Gacy could have gotten down in that crawl space himself due to his physique. And Gacy was actually out of town when it came to certain murders that occurred. And that is provable. And people look at me and say, you're just deceiving yourself. It's the truth. And I do believe those young men Gacy got them to procure some of the boys and definitely helped put them in the crawl space and maybe even helped perpetrate the crimes. And there's one victim who got away who said there was more than one person perpetrating the sex acts on him.
Was he ever remorseful?
Never.
What do you make of that?
I think that's part and parcel of being a sociopath. You are a person who can stab someone to death and eat a ham sandwich over the still warm body. That's it. They lack a conscience. They don't believe what they did was wrong. They believe they are justified in doing whatever they want. And Gacy was definitely a sociopath.
Don't answer this if you don't want to, but how did he generally kill people? Did he drown them?
He usually used a rope around their neck and strangled them.
Mm-hmm. Were you there when he was executed?
I was not allowed to be there, so no, I was not there.
You were there.
There
the last day, though.
I was there the last day, hours before his execution, and it was a lottery. The media got to put a lottery in, and they could sit there. I think Walter Jacobson actually was present at the execution.
The media was like a Super Bowl at the event. In fact, you were on Good Morning America with Joan London, and just before you went live with Joan London to talk about his appeal, they said, we're going to have you split screen with one of the victim's mothers. What did you say then?
And that victim's mother was the kid Robert Peast, who was the last Gacy victim.
And the reason that Gacy was caught.
Exactly.
So you could have done a split screen with them.
Yeah, and I said to Joan London, I said, I can't do that. My story is very different than their story. If I were a victim's family, I'd want to strangle him myself. I don't think the two stories should be together. I don't think they should be subjected to me. I can take it, but I don't. I think this is wrong. And she agreed with me, to her credit. She separated the interviews.
Yeah, I was glad to hear that. If you imagine a portly Chicago kind of guy, maybe works for Streets and Sand, which is not about Streets and Sand, but you're just conjuring up an image. He fit that. He was a construction guy. He was funny. He was good with a quip. On the last day that you saw him, as you were leaving that room and were going to leave him to his end, you said, do you want me to stick around? And he said, at your rates, I can't afford it. Or words to that effect.
You know, it's hard to talk about someone that evil being funny. But I do talk about it in my book because I think his humor really deflected a lot of attention from some of the darkness. I think that was that helped people be attracted to him, and I think it deflected away from some of his really bad qualities.
The book is also about your journey as an attorney, as a young woman coming into that field, being successful and putting up with what a young successful woman had to put up with as she was coming up in that field, especially defending John Wayne Gacy. It's all of that in the book, John Wayne Gacy, Defending America's Most Evil Serial Killer on Death Row. Nice to talk to you, Karen.
Thank you, John.